This is an ABC podcast.
I'm at the top of the Empire State Building, and from here I can see the entire city. It's the concrete jungle where dreams are made. The home of Billy Joel, Bobby De Niro, Whoopi Goldberg and Stella, who I met in the lobby. Yeah, I don't know Stella, but that's the thing. People leave their boring lives in small towns and make their way here. Because everything about this city holds promise, excitement, sensation. What happens to boring things in a spectacular city? New York, show me your boring side. What? Well, I can't hear you.
It's Stella. We met in the lobby. You left your wallet in the elevator. I'm just going to leave it over at the reception.
Oh, dear. Oh, thank you, kind stranger. I'm Jonathan Green, and this is Return Ticket, the show that takes you on journeys of the mind to the near, the far-flung, searching for what the tourist may never see. In this series, we'll find the unexpected in the familiar, going to travel destinations popular and obscure, peeling back new layers and rich histories. In Season 1, we'll be looking for things including the real Bali, renewed Christchurch, and the calm that only a bicycle can bring to Beijing. Think of this as tourism untrapped. This time, banal New York. The thing about New York is it's a walking city, and when one walks, one gets snacky. I would argue that of all meals, the snack is probably the most banal. It's no event like dinner or lunch or brunch. It's not the stuff of champions, unlike breakfast.
Hot dogs! Get your hot dogs in!
Untethered to times of day, the need for a snack can strike any time. And for any reason, in the Big Apple, apples, yet another great snack. The most obvious way to procure a snack is to buy something from a street vendor. Oh, Muhammad, hi. Muhammad Attia, he's the director of the Street Vendor Project in New York. You're a former vendor yourself, isn't that right, Muhammad?
That's right. That was my life for about 10 years. I spent 10 years of my life selling different things in the city of New York. I was a food vendor at the very beginning. I sold hot dogs and pretzels in Times Square. Then I turned to have my own business, and I was selling smoothies for a couple of years before I transferred to selling halal food in the Upper East Side in Manhattan. And then I ended up just giving up the whole business and working in the organization.
What was your path into street vending? How did you come to be there selling hot dogs?
It was really interesting beginning. I just learned about street vending by meeting a vendor. I was going on Fridays to the mosque doing the Jumu'ah prayer, and I stopped by this halal food cart, and I was like, wow, I love what you guys do. How can I get involved in such a job and such a business? And they explained to me that it's pretty easy business to start and just like a pathway for the American dream, right? You can start with something very small, then you expand your business, and then you can have your restaurant one day. So I was like really inspired by the story that this vendor I was buying food from shared with me.
And is that a typical path?
It is pretty typical, yeah. I mean, no wonder a lot of Egyptian immigrants like myself are selling halal food across New York City, and hot dogs and pretzels and all that typical stuff. Also, we see in different neighborhoods, a lot of different immigrant communities would just come and look around what their communities do, and they would just pretty much get involved in a similar business and a similar job. So that's like the typical street vendor story in New York City.
There are around 20,000 people working as street vendors across this city. Not all of it food. You'll find small business people of all types, flowers, books, selling everything, even art. Me? I think I'll go for a hot dog this time. Mustard and tomato sauce.
Hot dogs and mustard, there you go.
Oh, it's not easy work, though, is it? I mean, these must be long days.
Yeah, they are. They are very, very long days. A job that comes with a lot of challenges. Challenges that start with the weather. Just being out there, dealing with the weather, whether it's too hot or too cold, when it's 120 degrees or 21 degrees, we are out there. And by the way, like, those numbers are Fahrenheit, so I know in your part of the world, you probably use different measurements, so that doesn't sound too terrifying to you. Yeah, so the 21 is like minus 15 and minus 20, and the 120 is like the 35, 40 degrees in Celsius measurement. So it's really, really terrifying to just think about the weather and think about how street vendors spend very long hours in the street every day dealing with that.
See, I'm impressed by two things there. One, that there are vendors out there in that sort of incredibly cold and challenging weather, but also that people are eating hot dogs in the street when it's minus 15 degrees. That impresses
me
as well.
That's right. I remember at my first time I worked in Times Square, and that was like the winter of 2010. And it was like really freezing cold, and people would stop by and buy hot dogs from my cart. And I was like, wow, you guys really like that hot dog to stand here for a whole 5 minutes to pick up a hot dog from me and hang out by the cart and eat it. So I just made sure that was the best hot dog they ever had. It's worth the effort.
Getting into the vending game can be quite hard. Around 40 years ago, the municipal government put a cap on the amount of vending licenses available for street vendors.
Like myself, when I was selling food, I started working for people at the very beginning. And then when I was able to save enough money to start my own business, I couldn't get a permit from the city. So I had to just look around and find how those people get into the business and how they get involved and start a food cart. And I learned that there is an underground market for the existing permits because they are very rare. So whomever hold those permits just keep them, and they keep renting them out under the table for the real vendors like myself back then, who want to get involved into the business and just take advantage of that situation and take a lot of money under the table that just basically goes from my own profit to their pockets just for being lucky enough to have one of those permits. So it's a really, really challenging system to navigate and work with.
It's easy to forget that even in New York City, dreams don't come easy. I'm ready to walk again. I'm on my way to Manhattan's Upper East Side to meet my friend Anthony. It's a long walk, but I've got time. I just need to figure out what to do with this hot dog wrapper. Oh, look, the Rockefeller Center. I won't stop there. That's way too sensational for today's mission. Plus, I need to find a bin. My hands are smelling like mustard. What is that sign? Oh, that sign looks like if I turn here, I can go to the Museum of Modern Art. Look, I'd do it, but I need to get rid of this trash. We're coming up to 57th Street now. Oh, there's Trump Tower. Surely they have a bin. Oh, strangely, no, that doesn't seem to be the case. Although I am seeing a lot of trash bags about the place. What's that about? I'll have to ask Anthony Enone. He's been working at New York's sanitation department for more than 10 years.
So in Manhattan, most residential collection waste pickup happens 3 times a week, and bigger buildings will put it out in opaque black bags. And smaller residential homes sometimes use the bags. Sometimes they put it out in the can in the street, and we come and pick it up. Like I said, in Manhattan, it's probably three times a week. In some of the outer boroughs, where it's less bigger buildings, that'll happen twice a week. And then your recycling pickup will be once a week. So right now, for most of the city, that's split up between paper and metal, glass, and plastic, with some intermittent composting happening.
So Oscar the Grouch, he was a bit of a, a bit out to one end in his can. He should have been in a bag.
He should have been in a bag. That would have made it a lot easier for us to pick it up, you know?
I guess that's the thing. A bag is easier to pick up, yeah? It's softer. You can grip it.
Yeah, you just grab it, toss it right in, and you're done. With the can, you know, you got to tip it over. You got to put it back near the house. It's an extra step.
Okay, so I can use the bag. I didn't know. Be right back. Just going to get rid of my wrapper. Okay, I'm back. So this building, Ethy, tell me about this.
This is the 91st Street Marine Transfer Station. And right now you're just looking at the ramp from across the street. And believe it or not, we dump all of the garbage from the east side of Manhattan here.
Yeah.
Right in this little residential neighborhood. Our trucks will come in when they finish their route, or later at night, depending on the situation. And they'll dump onto what we call a tipping floor. And we'll have a couple loaders in there that push the garbage and make it into piles. They eventually push those piles into holes in the ground into a container that's on a scale. Once the container gets to about 50,000 pounds, we'll seal it up, and then it'll roll out onto the pier behind the building, which you can't see, which is on the East River. And from there, it'll be picked up by a crane and dropped onto a barge and barged away.
That's how much garbage are we talking about into this transfer station?
It's pretty significant. We operate five of them across the city, and then we also use a few private vendors to help us remove some of the extra. We pick up close to 12 million pounds of collection and recycling every day.
With that 12 million pounds a day, how many trucks are we talking about, and how many guys picking up bags?
So we have 7,500 uniform employees, and in addition to picking up all the collection and recycling, we're also responsible for plowing and salting the streets when it snows. So just at the drop of a dime, we empty all the trucks and throw plows on them, and we're out there plowing the streets. And we have about 700 salt spreaders that can spread salt.
Same trucks to do the garbage and the snow plowing. That's clever.
Same trucks that pick up the garbage. We have plow jacks on the front of every single one of them. Toss a big plow right on the front, and they're out the door.
Look, I don't know how to break this to you, but I'm snacky again. Now, I don't want anything too extravagant. It's banal New York, so let's keep it on theme. How about a convenience store? Oh, look, who's that man waving at me to come inside? Ow, good God, bodega cat.
His name's Stanley.
Stella, I didn't know you owned a bodega. And, oh my goodness, it's comedian and cookbook author Eric Wareheim. Tell us about this place.
We're in a bodega, which is the heart, the core of New York City. There's one on every corner. You can get literally anything you need, medical things, bagels, milk, produce. It's how the city operates.
Bodega is the Spanish word for storeroom or wine cellar. The term was popularized by Puerto Rican immigrants who came to New York and opened up convenience stores. There are about 13,000 bodegas across the city.
I thought you lived in L.A. Why are you here?
They don't have bodegas in Los Angeles, so I had to pop in real quick. I have a little tunnel that I can get here very, very quickly.
Does this place do snacks?
Oh, yeah. And it's not just snacks. Like, nowadays, bodegas back 20 years ago were rough. Nowadays, you got your premium chocolates. I go and I get, like, a nice milk chocolate with toffee crumbles in it. I know that's controversial because I'm a food guy and people think I need dark chocolate, but I just sometimes white chocolate.
White chocolate.
And, yeah, especially bodegas are a place where you go after you've had a couple pints and you want those snacks and take back to your apartment. So it's another essential thing.
Eric is clearly a connoisseur of the contemporary bodega. I guess all that time spent in New York making sweet TV with Aziz Ansari has paid off. And since I'm likely to get snacky again, I figure it's worth throwing a few hypotheticals his way.
Okay, quick question. So yeah. What would you buy if you had a really nice restaurant reservation in maybe an hour? But you're hungry now. I want a snack to tide me over.
Yeah. What I do, I like a little, sometimes they have cut up crudités, you know, some like, this is the healthy, Eric.
If we're That's very healthy.
Yeah. Depends on where we're going. You know, if we're going to sushi later, I could eat a whole, I could definitely get a grilled cheese with tomatoes. You know, that was like my thing growing up in Philly, New York, is grilled cheese with tomatoes, then I'll have sushi. But if I'm going to like a steakhouse, I'll do like a little crudités. And now they have like organic produce at some of these places. I'll have an apple. Anything like that.
Okay, other side of the evening, we're on our way home. It's been a pretty long session.
Yeah.
It's past midnight.
Oh.
We're reasonably smashed.
Yes.
We need a snack again. What will we get?
First thing I would get is cheese poofs. Those big, cheesy, you know what those things are? Cheese curls. Cheesy poofs are, it's like Cheetos brand. I can't believe I actually like them with fine wine as well, with a nice Riesling, which is very weird. Anyways, some kind of chip or cheesy poofs. Then I'll get some chocolates. I might get two. I might get a white chocolate, definitely a milk chocolate with some kind of like caramel, sea salt. And then if they have caramels, I get those as well.
Let's extend the theme. Hangover cure from Bodega.
Hangover, they have juices and stuff there. You know, I'm kind of like a light... I'm not like a hangover guy that I need to get a big breakfast. I actually need to just like replenish my body. I'll get like a green juice with a lot of ginger and a bagel with cream cheese. You know, that's like classic bodega vibe.
Okay, alternative bodega scenario. What do I buy just because I'm bored and I want to eat something?
Just anything?
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend another New York thing. It's like egg salad sandwich. That's kind of big. And the thing about bodegas is across the board, they're pretty good. Like there's not that big of a hierarchy. Like, oh, you have to go to this one bodega. Most ones you pop in, there's a level of trust. You're like, I could kind of sense this egg salad or chicken salad would be good. Get it on wheat bread. You know, be a little healthy.
Subway snack.
I would get
not too smelly.
Yeah, I like a little string cheese. You know, like in a little plastic. Just pop it out, suck that down. I might put up my jacket and suck that cheese in private because I don't want everyone knowing my mozzarella fetish.
Ah, noted. I think I'll buy some stringy cheese on my way out. Maybe an apple. Cool Ranch corn chips?
You want some cheesy poofs?
Oh, yeah, go on. I'll take cheese curls and some peanut butter cups.
Twinkies?
What's that?
Oh, you'll want to take two of those. They're pretty good.
Twizzlers?
You want the cheese toasty with tomatoes?
Oh, yes, please.
You got it.
And, look, perhaps some antacids for the plane ride home.
Antacids? Oh, over here we call it Pepto-Bismol.
Thanks, Eric. See you next time.
Watch out for Stanley. Why are you always in the way, Stanley?
Anthony Anone, New York Sanitation Department. As I live and breathe, I'm back. Tell me, are you a New York man, born and bred?
Born and bred, yeah. I was born in Queens and I'm living in Brooklyn now.
And what got you into sanitation? What was the path?
You know, it's one of those things when you're born in Queens, you know, you turn a certain age and your parents say, why don't you take this test? That's how all the hiring's done for most city agencies, sanitation, NYPD, the fire department. You take a test, it's a reading comprehension, basic cognitive test, and you get put on a list. And then I took that test when I was 19, and when I was 26, I got a letter in the mail that said, congratulations. I was lucky enough that my uncle was actually a sanitation worker. He picked up garbage for 25 years, and he was a shop steward over in Astoria, Queens. So he was, pretty heavy-handed in the, hey, you should really take this job, because I was tending bar at the time, you know.
Okay.
And you know, I was 26 years old. Who wants to give up that gig, you know? But they talked me into it, and 10 years later,
the
you know,
rest here is I am. History.
Yeah.
But that's a great thing. I mean, in a
In a place like New York, this sort of fabulous, famous city of the world, but here you are making that place work.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's a wonderful job for everyone that gets out every day and gets it done. It's unbelievable. I'm really happy and fortunate to be a part of it.
By now, we've wandered quite a way. We must be approaching the center of Manhattan. And this large park looks neat. I wonder what they call it. Anyway, Anthony, is there a peak day for garbage in New York City?
Every day. Every day. Every day is a big day of the year for New York garbage. It doesn't stop. It's like a wave, you know? It's like the ocean.
Ceaseless, pounding on the shore.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I remember when I was a sanitation worker and I was on a route one day in Corona and, you know, it's a heavy day. It's a long day. And we were going to make a right turn down the street, which was the heaviest block on the route. And I turned to my partner and I said, hey, maybe there's no garbage on it. You know, and he just looked at me with a funny look and a sly grin, like, you know, it was wishful thinking, but there was no way that we were going to turn the street and there would have been nothing there, you know. That's just the way it is.
What's the biggest garbage part of New York? Who makes the most?
Oof, you know, it's heavy everywhere. The Bronx has a lot of densely populated in some areas with tall buildings. So, but every if you walked in, we have 58 garages, and if you walked into all 58 of them, they'd all tell you that they got the heaviest route, you know?
Of course. With all my snacking, I seem to be generating quite a bit of trash myself. It's only fair I pitch in to help. Anthony, what's the best technique for picking up and heaving those bags into the truck?
Knees bent, live with your legs, and, you know, try not to do too many twisting motions. Just get the bag as close as you can to the hopper and, you know, gently lift it in. You know, sometimes that's not always possible. Navigating some of these streets, you know, New York City's infrastructure has been around for, you know, a pretty long time. So some of these streets are not exactly equipped for a 25-yard garbage truck to go down.
No.
So it can be a little challenging.
And I guess the tricky thing with a bag is there it is, but you really don't know what that weighs.
Correct. You always got to give it a little test pull before you go, you know. But we call some bags that come out of compactors sausage bags, and they'll be really packed from the compactor machine, like in the basement of larger apartment complexes, and your friend will have to help you, you know. One on each side.
All right. Wish me luck. Heave ho!
Use your core, buddy.
Lift with the legs, you little man.
It's tough work.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a grind. You know, it's a grind. It's a thankless job, and. But, you know, it feels good when you get to the end of that block and you picked up all the trash on it. You turn around and you see a clean street. That, you know, that's a feeling that's hard to replicate anywhere else.
I could not agree more. So, we didn't walk the High Line, or browse at the New York Library, or have dinner with Beyonce and Jay-Z. But I hope you enjoyed this short stay in NYC anyway. I often think it's the ordinary, unremarkable things that give a city its character. Trains are the subway, the footpath is the sidewalk. Trash is collected in bags, convenience stores are bodegas. And if you want to start a hot dog stand, well, you face fierce competition. But hey, if you could make it here, you could make it anywhere.
Hot dogs! Get your hot dogs here!
You've been listening to Return Ticket, the show that transports you to far-flung places, familiar and unexpected. This time, an exploration of banal New York.
You heard from Muhammad Attia, Eric Wareheimen, Anthony Inone. Producers are Lisa DeVissi, Alan Whedon and Emma Masters. Technical production and theme by Brendan O'Neill. Executive producer is Rhiannon Brown. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. Until next time, I'm Jonathan Green.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.